Welcome to Keep Making Movies, the podcast where we explore, shall we say, movies that may have needed a bigger budget. We evaluate the movie for what it is, decide if it could have been improved with a budget, and if it'll join our Keep Making Movies official recommend list. I'm your host, KJ, and with me is...
Tom.
Today, we are discussing Matthew Butler Hart's Infinitum, Subject Unknown. This is Matthew Butler Hart's fourth feature-length film that he made with his wife. In Infinitum, we follow a woman trapped in an attic who eventually gets out over and over and over again. It's a little confusing as to exactly if she remembers the resets of the loop. She seems to get a little further. She seems to be able to remember things from sometimes previous loops, sometimes future loops, side loops. Sometimes she sees herself a little bit. And we're getting further and further and further. At the same time, we're getting interview clips from Ian McKellen and Varys from Game of Thrones that are kind of explaining what's going on a little bit. Turns out they're doing experiments so that a human mind can see the infinite possibilities that surround us at all times. And presumably the woman we're following is part of that experiment right now. The movie ends with someone saying, "Okay, turn the experiment off," and we cut to black. And that is our movie. Tom, what do you think the goals of the creators of Infinitum were?
I think the goals of the creators of Infinitum were to explore the multi-world theory that is something in quantum physics, something in speculative philosophy, in which because a particle is both wave and particle, and it isn't anywhere at any one time, that once it's observed, the wave function collapses. A particle could be in any number of places and is in any number of places probabilistically. And so this gives rise to the particle is in all places, and therefore there's multiple or infinite worlds, and in each world the particle is in each single place. And I think the filmmakers are attempting to do that at the macro scale. And they're attempting to explore what it would be like to live in that. Kind of, because our main character doesn't have a memory of that, or her memory is somewhat foggy. It advances, but it sometimes resets, sometimes scrubbed. That, I don't think, is really part of the multiple worlds
and
thing.
Sometimes she seems to remember stuff that hasn't happened yet, necessarily. Right? We don't, like, for instance, she knows where the keys are to the car. And we don't know, is it because on a previous loop she found them, or maybe on a future loop she found them, right? It's the all possibilities, and she just seems to be able to remember sometimes the other possibilities that doesn't matter when they happened, before or after this particular loop.
Yeah, it's odd because the goals of the experimenters, as you learn from voiceovers and also things echoing in her head, for some reason, are that people will be able to see infinite possibilities. Now, that infinite possibilities that they're able to pick, right? I'm able to choose doing this podcast or going to a movie, right? And I could see the version of me that goes to the movie and see the version of me that does this podcast. I don't exactly know why I can't see that right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can imagine the me that goes to the movie and imagine the me. Are they literally visualizing themselves doing something else?
I think that's what the movie's doing. I think the movie is trying to visualize what the quantum string theory style idea would look like. More than just what we imagine in our head, right? We can imagine, oh, if I went to the movies, I'd be sitting in the dark right now, and there'd be... I think that the movie wanted to kind of visualize it. I think that was the goal, was, hey, there's this idea of all the possibilities happening. Can we put that on film?
Okay. I mean, we don't really see all the possibilities happening. We sort of see checkpoints where we see decision branches, the point of the decision branch, because they change the filter, I believe. I don't know how consistent they are with that. but I believe that's when you see a decision point or a branch. But you don't really see her seeing her go left left or seeing her go right, except sometimes.
Well, so I want to bring up a video I had sent you, Tom. The video is a YouTube video called Quantum Physics Kaizo Mario World 2 Stage 1, 101 Deaths. And in that video, you're watching someone play Super Mario World, which is a 2D side-scroller similar to Super Mario Brothers on the NES. And what you're seeing is each of their playthroughs overlaid on top of each other. So you sometimes you only see one Mario, because in the beginning, he just ran right. But sometimes he jumped a little bit earlier, a little bit later. So you might see multiple Marios jumping when he probably should jump. Sometimes he ran past the jump a little bit, then came back, then jumped. So that Mario might be a little bit behind. Sometimes he fell in the pit. Sometimes a lot of the Marios fell in the pit. They didn't make it to the next thing, but then some did. So it's all the possibilities, but not just every pixel can be every color. It's all the probabilistic possibilities that Mario probably would go through overlaid on top of each other. And I think this movie's doing a similar thing. So it's not just every atom in every spot, right? There's no sesame seeds floating above a bagel. A sesame seed still has to be attached to the bagel to kind of make sense. But in this, we're slowly seeing all the possible things she could have done if she found herself tied up in an attic in this kind of bizarre situation that she's in.
So that's how you see the goals of the creator. We're resetting her enough times to see her do a different decision that's possible to her at every branch.
I think not necessarily at every branch. And I think it's more just what would it look like if we could show the multiple Marios or if we could show the woman multiple times. I don't think they're trying to attach anything to that. I don't think they're trying to say, oh, like we're going to map out everything she can do. And now we want to show that. I think it was more, all right, well, she's going to wake up. She's going to try to leave the house. She's going to try to drive the car. There's just these different pastiches. What's the word I'm trying to think of here?
Like a pastiche, like a collection of things together?
Yes.
It's a pastiche. It's a pastiche of these different
things. Not necessarily that they're going to tell a narrative, which I don't think there's very much narrative in this
movie
at all.
There's no narrative.
So I think it's just a pastiche of what could have happened. And then they kind of order it in a way that at least we can follow a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think the goal was just to visualize this idea.
Okay, to visualize these kind of multiple fit, you know, the many, not infinite, but many possibilities that this woman could have gone through.
Right.
All right. I mean, that's a fairly humble goal, I think. And
yeah, right.
And that's fine, I guess. it's not nearly as exciting as the video. What makes the video you sent me exciting is that you can see all of these possibilities manifest at once. And so you could see in a moment, many options that Mario could go through. In this, the plot is laid out so that she's solving a puzzle. That's what it seems like. She's solving the puzzle. She's in the room puzzle. And she's able to get out of the chair pretty easily. And she solves the door puzzle, which is how do I get out of the room? Well, here's the door on the floor type thing. Then she solves the car puzzle. You know, I mean, it's like that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And so while these things, I see your point, while these things represent like decision points, it seems like the decisions she makes are more like a video game, like a role-playing video game, a sort of Sierra level.
Sure. Like a King's Quest or a,
Yeah, exactly. Where it's, okay, I've come to the decision point. How do I get past it? And oh, the keys are over here. Okay. Oh, the car's not going to start. What do I do to start the car? Apparently, will it? You could just.
Well, yeah, it gets a little weird there. But I think we're getting it from Mario's perspective, right? Another option would have been to get some special effects and, you know, some clever editing and have you watch her do multiple things at the same time, right? It would be boring if we just saw all of them at the same time. I don't even know how you do that, but you might be able to set it up so that you see one of her split into eight and then the ones that make it down the stairs and then split into 16. You could have done something like that, possibly.
You see a little bit of that.
Every so often she sees herself. Mm-hmm. Right, there's like a cut of herself, which again I think it's now from Mario's perspective, mm-hmm. as opposed to from someone watching Mario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, And then it's one of the Marios who have died and have been resurrected, and he's seeing
trying
more...
the level again.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, I think that's fine. I could kind of get that reading. What do you make of the other plot stuff?
Yeah. So let's jump in. So how do we think they did with the money they had? And let's start with the other plot points that you're bringing up, right? So if it's more than just to visualize the multiverse, feels to me more like a Marvel Endgame thing these days, but a multiverse of possibilities. It didn't make too much sense when she willed the car to start, right? I couldn't explain. Was she like moving through the possibilities and then picking one? Is that the goal of the experimenters, that they're going to give people the ability to do this now because they can experience all the possibilities?
Yeah, that seems to be what they mention in the movie, is that once we give people the ability to see all the possibilities, they can kind of control everything. They can control everything because she can pick the possibility in which the car starts, right? Maybe the quantum wave function lands on the not starting car 95% of the time, but if you could see which part of the wave function you want to collapse, you could collapse it how you like. And so you can pick the car starts, that type of thing. You can pick she's not really there when she's driving down the road and there's another version of her, and she instead of stopping the car when she's 100 yards away from the woman, she just drives through her in a panic, pretending it's a very odd scene that doesn't quite work. We can talk about it more, but I don't think we need to. I think that's the thing. And so that's a plot point that I think the movie does explain. And I think it's fine, kind of. You know, they don't do anything with it. It's an interesting idea, but they don't do anything with it, right? It's not
right.
Like
there's no answer.
Superpowers, yeah. And now she can stop the. They're not called whiteness. What are they called? What is the organization?
Witness.
Witness. Thank you. When I first saw it on the screen, I thought it said whiteness. I thought that was the name of the organization. I was, oh no, whiteness is coming to get us all. But yeah, so witness. She doesn't use it to like stop witness or do anything. I think the only time she uses that power is to turn on the car, which doesn't get her very far, and to not hit the woman by making her not there anymore.
Yeah.
Which first of all, you're in a world where there's no other people. Wouldn't you stop the car and want to talk to the only other person you saw?
Yeah. I think on a previous iteration, we saw her swerve to get out of the way, and then the car wouldn't start again after she did that. So
yeah.
I think she was determined to not stop the car so that she could get past this decision point.
Okay. That whole scene. But I think this brings up another part of the plot, which factors into that question you're asking, which is how do they do it with the money they did? They have a very particular problem that a lot of money wouldn't get them out of, which is they had to film it during the lockdown of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And so using the circumstances, I think they did well, because it was just the director on an iPhone and her. And I think if they had more money, they would have put it off, right? They would have waited for
right.
They had a crew yep. and had a real camera instead of an iPhone and had more than one filter. I think they use sepia, the sepia filter on the iPhone to do some of it, which we're laughing at, but you know, whatever. It's sort of an innovative way of dealing with a time when you really couldn't create a lot of moving pictures. And it was also, as I understand it, not intended for release. What they're trying to do is build an infinitum world with multiple graphic novels.
Yep, a
cinematic universe, yeah. And this is just a sort of experiment to kind of test the parameters of that cinematic universe.
Yeah, and I think also to test the phone. I think a big part of this was they were trying to figure out, is the phone a viable way to make movies after COVID lets up?
Yeah, so I think that's true. That's a good point. Can we make a full-length movie on an iPhone? Is that acceptable? Will people buy it? And then they explain the absence of people with a plot point in which this iteration of this woman is lost between the worlds.
Yeah, eventually she finds a version of herself that is sitting on a couch with a pad of paper saying that she's seen a bunch of her, and says, yeah, you're lost between worlds. That's why you can't get out. But let's talk about the isolation real quick. The isolation I thought was really cool. Have you ever played Metroid for the NES, Super NES, GameCube?
I have not. No, I don't. I don't know Metroid.
It's a game where you're a bounty hunter you've been dropped off on a planet and you're usually trying to find an alien or figure out what happened to the planet, but the planet is empty. And it's one of the coolest feelings of isolation I've ever had playing that game. And I felt like this movie also nailed the isolation. Not like Island, not like when we watched Island and we're like, oh, he's showing what isolation and depression feels like on an island. Not in a like an emotional way, but just in an eerie, creepy, like, why isn't there anybody here? Like, this it's when you're somewhere where you expect other people to be, but there's nobody around. So I thought they did that really well.
They use this circumstance. The plot explanation makes, I don't think, any sense. I don't get it at all.
No.
And so it has a sort of creepy. The problem, though, with how this movie does it and how other things do it, where you're kind of isolated and you're like, why is nobody here? That's sort of, I'm trying to think of a movie that does that, where you're just in a place and there's nobody there. And you know, why is no one here? What happened to everyone? Is that there's a threat presumed that explains why no one is there, right? There's something out there and we are isolated, and that thing that's out there that has caused this problem has to be explained, and it must be really, really bad because everyone is gone.
I kind of liked the lack of threat, but the mysterious tension. I thought there was a good balance there where I felt mostly safe the whole time, but still wanted to know what was going to happen next. I still felt like, oh, this mystery is going to unravel and I'm here for it. But I kind of also like that I'm not stressed out about, oh, is it something that's going to harm our main character? It never felt threatening.
Feels in danger. That's true.
No. I mean, every so often it flips to like, there's a war going on outside or something. But even that felt kind of out of place in the movie. Most of the time, she's just kind of safe, right? Like, she's tied up, but she gets out and then she gets free and then she's in a car and she's kind of smiling and kind of...
There's nothing that seems to threaten her. I think that's absolutely true. And you're right. There's no sense this woman is in danger. Now, as a consequence of that, I felt a lack of tension, right? I'm not worried or waiting, or there's no pressure. I mean, I understand what you mean. It is upsetting sometimes when you have a character you like and they're like constantly under danger. It's really stressful. Filmmakers can kind of abuse that stress sometimes. And so I get that, but I think you need to create the reason why filmmakers do that is it's a pretty easy way to create tension. You care about this character and you don't want them to be hurt. And the mystery, you're being driven to solve this mystery because that means she'll be safe or safer. She'll know what's going on so that she can deal with the threat more completely. And here it's just, there's no threat. So she's getting to the witness facility because
why? Right. What's why that going to do? Is that going to help?
Yeah.
You?
Right. Yeah. She's like, okay, I found a paper from a bar in this house. It's a wreck. I mean, there's just crap everywhere in this house. And this thing says witness with an address and there's a map. So this will go over there and see what's going on. I mean, there's no, you know, like, why doesn't she stop and talk, and not to harp on the scene, but why doesn't she stop and talk to the woman in the road? Maybe she has answers. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah. It's a little Twilight Zone this way. Mostly because in a Twilight Zone episode, again, there might not be a threat, but it's eerie. And you're, you know, in the 15-minute episode, you want to know what the big reveal is going to be at the end. This doesn't have a big reveal at the end, but while you're watching it, you don't necessarily know that.
Yeah, there is a Twilight Zone episode like this where he's a man like wakes up in a town and the town is just, there's nobody there and he can't figure out what's going on. And I won't reveal what happens at the end.
Ooh, audience. Google man wakes up in a town Twilight episode and see if you can find it.
It'll take you about 25 seconds to figure out what happens at the end of this episode, thanks to Google.
But speaking of the house, I liked the house. I thought that was a great set. It looked like either a house that you used to go to when you were growing up, but not literally that house, but more just how you remember it. There was kind of stuff all over the place. The geography didn't make that much sense. Like, she had to like go outside to go into another part of the house to get the keys sometimes. I did like the house.
It looked lived in. I'll say it looked lived in. I don't quite get whose house it was. It seems to be owned by the company, maybe, because they make a point that this person needs to feel they're under threat in order to somehow burn on their quantum powers or something like that, which I believe is the plot of Deadpool. I think that's how Deadpool gets his powers. So when she's Deadpooled into being some quantum woman or something like that, she has to be in this house and feel a sense of threat. But it looks lived in. And it's also, there's also all this stuff against the door. So it looks barricaded against something outside.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when she first appears there, she sometimes sees a version of the world in which there's some sort of fighting, some sort
it's
of
like
war
a, yeah,
going
like a
on.
Battle, like a war, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, oh, something bad happened. This is the aftermath of that. The people in this house were barricading themselves against the bad thing outside. That's why all the doors have crap in front of them. That's why she can't get out. We know she has to feel a sense of threat to become Deadpool, but it seems there's this other condition in which the world has been under some kind of violence, that London's in violence. And when you see London, it's futuristic, right?
A little
futuristic, which for some reason, the future is always represented as being like filled with blimps. Like in the future, we're going to have something that's slower than a plane and far more flammable. You know, that's the vision of the future. But we're in a future world in which everything's abandoned. And something really bad has happened, something that involved military, presumably. And people are scared. And so this house is where all the evidence is for this horrible thing that happened, but it's never paid off. We don't know whose house it is. Yeah. We know she was put there to feel the sense of threat, but the impression I first thought was, oh, she was put there to feel the sense of threat, to go through this experiment, and then a war happened. And so the experiment went awry because they couldn't follow through with it because there was some sort of catastrophe that happened in London. And so what we're seeing is this kind of half cooked experiment. That's what I thought we were going to get.
Kind of a 12 Monkeys thing almost.
Yeah. Is that what happens in 12 Monkeys?
Well, 12 Monkeys, they send him back to try to stop the apocalypse.
Yeah.
So it was almost they're using her mind to see why the war started or
I see what you're saying.
Try to prevent.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I see. So that would make sense. I was thinking more like there was an experiment and like they stopped it halfway through. Or just all the people who were doing the experiment were killed but her. And so the reason why she's in the in-between
stuck
world is the experiment was never finished. Now, we know this isn't true because the movie ends with them saying, okay, end the experiment.
Right.
And we get no explanation as to why there was a war other than in some universe somewhere, a war could have started and maybe she's just seeing that in her, you know, but there's also, why is she seeing only the war universe and the in-between the world universe and not random other universes? You know, so none of it really holds. And so I found the absence of people to just kind of make the movie sleepy. It also gives us, we get no person because of that. She's nobody to talk to. So I don't remember her name. We don't know if she's lost her memory. We know she doesn't remember how she got into that room, and she only remembers parts of the reset, but we have no idea if she knows who she is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, nothing. There's no clue that says, oh, yeah, she's forgotten who she is, or she remembers who she is, because she has no one to speak to. So it ends up becoming a handicap.
Or shows isolation even further. Like, you're not even with yourself.
it's not very interesting for us, right? Who have to watch a person who may or may not have an identity. I mean, think about that as a constructing a character. This character may or may not have an identity.
There's no character. There's no plot.
Yeah.
Do you think a budget would have helped?
Yeah, I think a budget would have, because I think, well, it's interesting to experiment with the iPhone. Can you make a full-length movie with an iPhone? And I think this movie, just as an experiment that they're working on their own to help develop their cinematic universe, fine. Maybe shouldn't have been released then, but you know, fine. But I think with a budget, you could have developed that war world better, right? It doesn't have to be a question mark at the end. You could have had her run into herself and actually have a conversation with herself more than just at the end.
Just the therapy session, it felt like.
Yeah, at the end. And here's the Twilight Zone explanation, or the Black Mirror explanation. You could have had more of these kind of quantum worlds popping up, right? I mean, if she's randomly seeing these other worlds but not participating in them, right, she's no longer entangled with anything, so she can't connect or touch anything in these other worlds. Even though she goes upstairs and opens doors,
grabs the keys.
Yeah, it's a little. There's apparently a shell of a world that's the in-between world, but there aren't any people there except versions of her. But I think you could have fleshed that out and explained it, and it would have made the movie more conventional. But, you know, conventional movies get made for a reason. They kind of do their thing pretty well. If we think of this movie as background to a sort of cinematic universe, then it's done its job. But I think money would have helped. I don't know. What do you think?
I think, first of all, sorry, Mr. McKellen, but cut his scenes. There's no reason for that. Yeah. I think it would have been a little eerier. Same maybe with Vari's scenes. I know that we don't get a lot of explanation, but maybe the movie didn't need explanation. Maybe it would have been better as just a impressionist. So I think they could have saved some budget there. I imagine a lot of the budget went to those two actors. I think the score could have been improved. Sometimes it was a little grating, so you could have put some money there. But I liked the house. I thought she was pretty good. Right, she's the only one on the screen for the whole time.
Fine.
Right?
Yeah, she doesn't have anything to do.
So I don't know. I kind of enjoyed the nebulous, disconnected, no plot, no character. It didn't overstay its welcome. It was pretty short. So yeah, I'm not sure.
It's interesting making it purely impressionistic, right? Where there's no Sir Ian McKellen, and we should say Sir Ian McKellen filmed his scenes on an iPhone and then just sent it to them. He has a few scenes in the beginning that's reminiscent of Alec Baldwin in that movie we
saw. In Andron that we did, yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the same thing. And Vari's, what's his name?
Conleth Hill.
Conleth Hill it's sort of the same thing, right? They're celebrities. All our budget is going to go to them. And they'll film 30 minutes of work on an iPhone and mail it to the director. So if you cut that and you just had this sort of person wandering around an abandoned London or an abandoned English countryside, potentially that could be very interesting. And just absent information, right? Just completely absent it. I think you would need more money, because I think you would need a better print. I think this would have to actually look good.
Like a movie. Yeah, probably because of the phone, it does have a little bit of a made-for-TV feel to the film quality. I mean, I know there's no film here, but
the picture quality is not very interesting. And so if you had some very interesting cinematography and you just had this sort of, you know, abandoned, and then you would also have to be a lot more creative, right? You'd have to use, I think montage could really help, right? Where you're colliding images together to give a narrative or a sense of who this woman is by, you know, doing like old school Soviet montage style and create kind of a sense of this person.
Does it make the list for you, Tom? Are you recommending Infinitum?
No, 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 recommending Infinitum.
Off the list for Tom.
Mm-hmm. How about you?
So at 35 minutes in, I was a solid yes. And 35 minutes in, we saw the loop a few times. It was a good mystery I thought I'd going. At this point, I thought it was a good complement to Coherence because they're kind of attacking the same thing in a very different way. Mm-hmm. So I thought it'd be kind of cool as a double feature. But then when you get to like the hour 20, really when you get to the third act, I thought really dragged the movie down quite a bit. But I'm going to go ahead and recommend it. It's a yes for me because I think it fits the bill. And I think if that third act was better, I think you'd have a pretty solid movie here. Well, it's official, audience. We have a split decision on Infinitum. So let us know on social media what you think, and then it can either make or not make the official recommend list. We're at Talking Studios. Audience, what's your favorite movie by Matthew Butler Hart? Let us know on social media.
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, if you haven't already, please like this video, subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is, and Adapt It, where we explore adaptations in various forms. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201-467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Keep Making Movies, wherever fine podcasts are found.
Join us next time when we discuss Doors from 2021, not to be confused with the Val Kilmer movie based on the rock band The Doors. This is a different movie called Doors from 2021. Stay tuned for our first impression of Doors. Next week, we'll be discussing Doors. Tom, how was your watch?
So I watched this movie a few days ago. I was busy this week, and I had an opportunity to watch it on Sunday. Today's Wednesday. So it has been a few days. The movie does have some interesting visuals, but because the plot doesn't really go anywhere, a lot of it dissipates. You really don't retain the movie very well, even after a few days. And so it's an anthology movie, and the three films give you different perspectives on this world and this phenomenon that's happening in this world. But since they don't drive understanding, they're kind of flimsy. And so the memory of them doesn't stick with you. There's not a real dynamic moment. And the parts of the movie that you would might credit with being most creative tend to feel very derivative. It feels like 2001: A Space Odyssey meets Annihilation meets Arrival. But yeah, it kind of drops out of your head after you see it. And I think it has no engine. Right. The anthology structure doesn't propel us to understand what's going on or to have a revelation, and therefore it just isn't particularly memorable. How about you, KJ? How was your first impression?
Yeah, actually, Tom, so the first time I watched this was spring of 2022, and then again spring of 2024 for this episode. And similar thing, when I watched it this time, it wasn't all new. I remember images from the first short in the movie, and I remember quite a bit of the second short, and then I couldn't remember the third one at all when it was starting to play. I was like, oh, what's it going to be? So audience, when you're watching, don't worry too much about the actual plots or things, because it's probably going to wash away in your mind anyway. But I did enjoy this movie. I do think there's some cool ideas. And I did remember the Doors, the actual Doors that you'll see, audience. Doors is available on Amazon's Prime Video at the time of this recording.
Wow, Talking Studios.
I mean, my path isn't you saw my place. It's just that loop around the building. It's not that dangerous.
Oh. Nice. There's not many loops left, huh?
No? Is that a segue?
That would be a great segue for Infinitum. I have no idea how we're going to say the title of this movie. But no, I just mean you're not going to run on your building that many more times.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I'm such a, I'm so prone to nostalgia that actually makes me sad, even though I really don't like living here. Like, oh, this is one of the last times I'm going to do this.
Run around, yeah.
You don't like living in this location, and this apartment complex is miserable.
So how do you say the title of this movie?
I would say Infinitum, subject unknown.
Infinitum. Okay. I feel like when I say it, it doesn't bounce right. Infinitum. Infinitum. Infinitum.
I think it's the Latin for infinity for some reason.
I thought it was just one infinity.
Oh, yeah. I think it's the singular nominative. What?
I was doing infinity is also singular.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can have multiple infinities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me see. I'm not.
Infinitum. Infinitum. Subject unknown.
Or infinitum.
Infinitum?
Yeah,
it is
maybe.
British.
Yeah, well, it'd be infinitum. Like we went on and on ad infinitum.
Oh, infinitum.
I think it would be infinitum because then that would have that.
Infinitum. Mm-hmm. Infinitum. And they're British, right? Infinitum.
Yeah.
Infinitum. Aluminium. Aluminium. Mm-hmm. Infinitum.
I think it is. I think it's actually the genitive, the dative case, not the nominative.
What's a dative?